The readings for the third Sunday in Advent are Isaiah 35, chapter 35, verses 1 through 10, James chapter 5, verses 7 through 10, and the Gospel of Matthew chapter 11, verses 2 through 11. And these readings can be found on the written version of the sermon on our website. Grace to you and peace from God our Creator and Christ our wisdom. Amen. I have a confession to make. I lit the joy candle on my Advent wreath a day early. I couldn't wait because I had been thinking and thinking and thinking about joy and coming up empty, which is a problem because we are fast approaching the season of Christmas joy, preparing for the birth of Jesus, who would later tell his disciples, and through them us, "These things I've said to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full." But you know what? I'm feeling more like John the Baptist these days when he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the one who is to come, or do we look for another?" Now that's quite a change, isn't it, from last week's reading? Last week, John was full of confidence, preaching with power about the one to come, whose sandals he was unworthy to even untie. But now, here he is, years later, sitting alone in a dark and dank cell, questioning his earlier confidence and perhaps his very mission and identity as he sends word to ask this poignant and even heartbreaking question: "Are you really the one, or should we look elsewhere?" The movement from last week's reading to this one is a jump from a sure and certain confidence to doubt, from fiery confidence to uncertainty and despair, from anticipation to disappointment, from hope to desperation. And we've all been there, right? Charging ahead with dreams and plans, moving forward with optimism about the future, only to be stopped in our tracks, maybe by illness, or an injury, or loss of employment, or the death of a loved one, or loss of a relationship, or any of a thousand other things that can cause us to suddenly stumble and lose our confidence. And when our heartache, uncertainty, despair, disappointment, and desperation isn't only about ourselves, but our entire nation, well, the pain is overwhelming. As it was for John, I imagine. As it was for the exiles in Babylon, too, the ones that Isaiah was writing to in our first reading, hundreds of years before John. They must have wondered, hey, weren't we God's own chosen people? How could it have come to this, to be so humiliated, to have our homeland taken away from us? Could the words from Psalm 137 express their heartache any more poignantly? "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, and there we wept when we remembered Zion." That kind of despair isn't unique to ancient Israelis. Exile is a condition in which many people find themselves. Refugees and displaced people from places like Syria and Somalia, unaccompanied children from Central America, political exiles such as the Dalai Lama. But we don't have to go far to find others in exile. The holidays can be an especially difficult time for LGBTQ people who have been banished from their families. And this year, I'm mindful of those who are estranged from family and or community because of the election. In a way, the whole country has been thrown into exile. Is this our home? We don't recognize it anymore. How can we sing God's song in a foreign land? As Orion put in the email introduction to Keeping in Touch, there is no joy in Mudville. So there I was with my Advent wreath candles burning down, candles for hope, for peace, and for joy. And I was thinking that this has been one of the most spiritually challenging Advents that I can remember. In the aftermath of the election, I don't know how it's been for you, but I have had to go a lot deeper into these words. Spiritual platitudes won't do, not for me, and I'm certainly not going to spout them for you. But just as hope is not the same as optimism, and peace is more than the absence of conflict. Joy is more than fleeting happiness. Remember that old camp song, I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart, down in my heart? You know, that's not just a dumb old camp song. Sometimes those old chestnuts get at a profound truth. Down in your heart is where you find the hope, the peace, and the joy that passes all understanding. Now, getting down into the heart may not be so simple for us. We let our hearts get pretty well defended, especially, let's admit it, against God. Because if we really allowed ourselves to feel the presence of divine spirit within us, well, it could shake our world. We might be inspired to do something that would totally mess up our vision of the way life is supposed to be. And I'm not going to tell you that that couldn't happen. But I am going to tell you that by opening our hearts to divine spirit, we also open ourselves to deep joy. And that must have been what Isaiah experienced. I mean, what else could have caused him to proclaim to the people who dwelled in deep darkness, these exiles in Babylon, let the desert and the wilderness exult. Let them rejoice and bloom like the crocus. Let it blossom profusely. Let it rejoice and sing for joy. Those whom God ransomed will return. They will enter Zion with shouting for joy, with everlasting joy on their faces. Joy and gladness will go with them. Sorrow and lament will flee away. Now, maybe some of those who heard Isaiah's words thought that he had gone off the deep end. There was no rational reason to think that any such thing would happen. But there it was, a song of joy in the midst of darkness. And that's what we're called to do in Advent. Advent reminds us that against all evidence to the contrary, another world is possible. New life can emerge from the ruins. In the patient partnership between divine and human, God keeps on creating and keeps on calling us to be innovative as well. And we owe it to ourselves and the world to find this place of joy down in our hearts. And maybe the quote that I put in this week in Keeping in Touch gives us a clue. It's so much easier to sing about joy than to talk about it. Now, I have to tell you that it was right here at this point in writing the sermon that I opened up the email from Orion with the bulletin attached. I wanted to see what he had picked for us to sing after the sermon. And I had to laugh out loud. Comfort, comfort, my people. Let me explain. I met with my spiritual director on Friday, and we spent most of the time discussing the aftermath of the election and about how we can find a balance between our righteous anger at what has happened and our compassion for people who are on the other side of the political divide, between being prophetic and telling it like it is and finding some common ground where reconciliation might happen. And what we came to was a recognition that we were going to have to accept that probably for a long time we're going to be in an uncomfortable place. And I jokingly said, well, we might not be able to sing Comfort, Oh Comfort My People this year. But now I see that I was wrong. And not just because Orion put it in the bulletin, but because it's exactly what we need to sing. The words of comfort to people living in exile are words of comfort for us too. And what happens when we sing, especially when we sing together, is that we go down into our hearts where we can find that deep joy. And no, it doesn't make logical sense, but logical sense isn't always what is called for. You know, I saw one of those time waster quizzes on a friend's Facebook page the other day, and it would determine if you are more right brain or left brain. My friend had scored 50-50, evenly divided between analytic, rational, objective left brain and 50% imagination, creative, music right brain. Mine, however, came out to be 70-30 on the analytical, rational, objective side. My comment was, "Oh, sigh, I've really been trying to engage that creative side more." My friend wrote back, "I think your analytical side is very creative." And my response was, "I'll have to think about that." Well, now I realize that my answer should have been, "I'll have to sing about that or dance." As Sufi teacher Pir Vilayet Khan asked, our other quote in Keeping in Touch, "Why aren't you dancing with joy at this very moment? It's the only relevant spiritual question." Okay, I know, not all of us are singers or dancers. But the message of both of these quotes is to do something to engage that creative right brain. Sing, dance, make art, read a poem, write a song, create a recipe, play silly games that make absolutely no sense. Laugh. I wish we had Dolores White here with us to do laughing yoga. That would be exactly what we need. Now, will all of this take away the troubles of the world? No. But it will create joy deep down in our hearts, where the holy presence resides in you. And from that holy heart of it, the world will change. In the patient partnership between divine and human, God will keep on creating and will keep on calling us to be innovative as well. But for now, it is much easier to sing about joy than to talk about it. And so that is just what we will do. Comfort, oh comfort my people. Amen.